Hello there. This is a recording of a teaching session which occurred on June 9th, 1997, here at Holden Village. This session is entitled Ideas of Community, and the presenter is Sister Rosina Ampa.
Before we begin, I would like to say a little prayer before we start. Almighty God, whose loving hand has given us all that we possess, grant us grace that we may honor you with our substance, and remembering the account which we must one day give, may be faithful stewards of your bounty. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Amen. My official title, or the name normally is written on my papers, are the ones they use for the religious people when you are ordained as well. So normally my official title is the Reverend Sister Rosina Ampa. But I prefer people calling me Sister Rosina, because that's how we call ourselves when we are in a convent. And when I go around doing missions or retreats, I ask people to call me Sister, because that's very simple and easy. But when it's written, the whole title has to come on the paper. And you get the Reverend because you are ordained. So when you see the Episcopal Sister with that title, the Reverend Canon or the Reverend Sister, then that person is ordained. Apart from that, you will just see the title Sister, so and so. I belong to the Order of St. Helena, which is a group, a religious community within the Episcopal Church. I know most people do not know that the Episcopal Church has religious people, but it's been going on for centuries. We have monks as well as sisters. And I live in the one that is called the Order of St. Helena. And Helena is Constantine's mother. And the community decided to use or chose that name because of the legend about that old lady. The legend goes like this. When she was 80 years old, she decided to go on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. And when she was going, the focus or the idea of the pilgrimage was to find the true cross that Jesus was crucified on. And when she went, she gave a lot of money for people to really dig the side of Calvary. And they discovered the three crucifix. And in order for her to locate the one Jesus was crucified on, they have to put a sick person on all three crosses. And the one that Jesus was crucified on, as soon as the sick person touched it, he was healed. And so the legend says she was the one who discovered the true cross. And that time she was 80 years old. So you can imagine, you know, this old lady just digging on the hillside in the compost pile, this finding the cross of Christ. And because the women believe that they are also in search of the same true cross, which is Christ, for us. That's why they chose to use that name Helena, because we are also on a pilgrimage and on a journey. With that background, I want to introduce our topic for today. And I have written it actually on the board. We all use the word community a lot. And we may all have different interpretation when we use the word community. And so today is going to be a dialogue, and please feel free to contribute because this is being taped. So we don't want to, you know, really just sit there for half an hour without. So I want people to think as I'm talking, because we all use that word, community. And what do you mean when you use that word, community? And I want to hear from people their own interpretation of the word community. When you use that word, what are you saying? So it's open forum now. I want to hear from you individually what the word means to you. Or what are you saying when you say it?
I think of the word support, and that it's a group that can be supportive of each other, meaning necessarily that it's not necessarily based on friendship or on these people being the favorite people in your life or whatever, but that you're able to provide support to each other. And I think that can be in small communities, but can also be in larger neighborhoods or cities, that we're able to offer support and the resources, and I'm not sure what else, but support, I guess, is the main word.
Okay, that's fine. You know, that's what she means when she used the word community. So I want to hear from people.
We have the word community at home, that community jobs mean. They're just not one person's job or another person's job in our family of six, but we're working together as a community. And that's our little community. And then our bigger community depends on which, your church community or your, my quilting community or my, it's kind of designating that I belong to different groups of people who have the same goals and ideas.
Okay, now we have two distinct words. We have support, and then you are using a different word of meaning people who are sort of geared toward one goal.
Mm-hmm. A certain goal.
With a certain goal, with a purpose, coming together with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what else?
I think of community as being open to or being present to another or to others in a way of listening to and exchanging with, sharing with, so being present to and sharing with each other.
Okay, be present and sharing. Okay.
I think of the word connection.
Connection.
There are people connected in some way, and it might be geographically, or it might be around an issue or a topic or a concern, but some kind of connection in some way.
Yeah, when I think about it, I think about the word relationship. Mm-hmm. People living in relationship to others.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, you know, this whole idea is about intentional community.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's somebody walking up to somebody else on the subway and saying hi and beginning a conversation, you know, what's that? Is that a type of community different from another type of community?
That's why I want to hear all of you contribute, and then we will go from there. So hold your question. We will come to those questions and talk about it. But you think of community as a relationship, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. What else?
Element of history,
mm-hmm.
some shared history.
Shared
together.
History. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lived life together,
mm-hmm.
some going through some parts of your life together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else? We have some more.
I think of it as, in a lot of ways, it's commitment. It's kind of like what Michelle was saying about not necessarily always being pleased with the people that you're with, but being committed because you know that in the group, there's a larger good than any of us could have alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think of the commitment of a community to finding the largest good and the fullest life for each individual and for their gifts. so that it's a balance between nurturing the individuals that make up the community and taking the community good as a very important, real thing that, that supersedes, you know, smaller things, smaller problems or smaller desires, but that the individual is not squelched, but really can blossom in that group.
Maybe an aspect that I think of is that community is a group of people who are sharing lots of things. And one of the things they've done is they've entered in to some kind of agreement about the way they will structure themselves to accomplish certain goals or their vision. Lynn and I belong to one, and I'm thinking of our opening statement of our vision statement is, we strive to be an ecumenical Christian community who, through shared worship and ministry, affirm nonviolence, love of justice, and peace. But it's through our shared worship, and so there's a structure in which we've agreed that we will come together on and move on from.
Okay. Connectedness is what I was going to say, Jack. You said connections. And I don't know if intentional is the word I mean, but I can't think of a better one. Intentional connectedness. Or intentional relationship with her. And it's many things. I mean, it has commitment and it has, you know, so many things.
Okay. Brother upstairs, what do you think about community?
I guess I would say that it's a group of people that are sharing all things in common, so that would constrict it from some of the other people were saying about larger, or maybe a traditional, and that Seattle would say, often you would say as a community, I would, in my definition, Seattle would not be a community, it would typically be a smaller group of people really sharing everything in common. So that would mean financial and physical resources as well as the emotional resources.
Okay.
Can't there be community on different levels?
Yeah, and that's why I said, when you think of the word community, what comes to your mind? That's why I was tapping individual understanding of the word community when you use it. Because we all have different interpretation when we use the word community. And all what you have said is true about community. It encompasses all, but the dictionary says that community is viewed as a group of people who have come together under the same rule or law. That's what the dictionary interprets community. So when you view the community, the Jewish community, as they were moving as a body, what kept them together was the rule and the law that put them together. You and I have a different view of community, as we've just said here or expressed it here. Yes, we have community in the, on different levels. As our brother David said, if you meet somebody on the subway and you say hi, and you started talking and sharing with each other, are you building community? You are in relationship with that person, but you are not building community. Community is intentional. Most of you use that word, but community is intentional. People making effort to live together. Not as a diversity in unity. That's what community is. Diversity in unity. We don't have all to be the same. We don't have to be able to come to the same level intellectually. We don't have to have the same gifts. But we come together so that each one will contribute to make the same one thing come to fruition.
And when I think of community, I was throwing that word when we were working, I think of crock pot cooking. You all know what that means, isn't it? You put in one vegetable, it's going to be the same. And you put in another one, it's going to come out the same. You put in another one, it's going to be the same. But you have to have a lot of ingredients in order to make a good soup. You cannot just put in a crock pot a meat, a bunch of meat, and just leave it there and expect a soup. You have to put in onions, you have to season it, you have to put in carrots, you have to put in other things if you want a real good soup. But when it's cooked, when you dish in a spoon and you put it on the plate, you still can see the onions, you still can see the carrots, you see, but they have produced something profound. And it tastes wonderful. That's community. When you put in that carrot alone, you don't have soup. And if you put it in the blender and you try to mush it together, you have a soup of some sort, but it's really not distinct. And sometimes I think when we think of community, we think of people coming together being the same. And it's wrong. When you have that kind of vision, the community doesn't flourish. Because what you do is you kill what other gifts that would have come up to help the community grow. Because what you are looking is you are looking at everybody to be the same. And it's very hard because God did not create us all to be the same. That's the beauty of the world. That's really the beauty of the world. You have tall, short, fat, thin, black, white, red, pink, if you will call it that. I mean, you have all this variety. Look even at your own fingers. Look at them. They are not the same, are they? They are very different. Okay, let us pretend that the tall finger is really not good in there. Let's pretend to take it out. Try to tie a knot and see how difficult it will be. It will be very hard to try to tie a knot. You may do it in a way, sort of, but it will never be the same. Okay, take this thumb. It's not good. Okay? Disappear. Try to tie your shoelace. You will see how you really have to spend hours in doing that. That's community. But what we have some of us have done is we gather around us people like us, people who believe like us. Anybody with a different idea is a rebel. We have to put that person aside because that person doesn't think like us. Instead of trying to make room and see what God is doing with us, we try to put them on the back burner, or we try to isolate them, and you don't have a community. Now, our passage scripture for this summer is we are no longer strangers. And in Ephesians 2:19, we read how God is or has already broken down the barriers and the hostility among human beings through Christ, and how now God is trying to build us all together into one unit, a temple. How do we do that? If we continue to have communities that only group together if they have the same ideas, that group together if we are all alike, that group together if we can speak the same level, how do we have a community? Each one of us have a different view of it, and they are all right, they are all together. But when you put it together, you have the community. So the question for me, asking about or talking about community, is how do we integrate and use all the gifts that God has given us? Even within Christian community, as churches, we tend to tap the sharp ones who can zap like this when you want them to do something and leave the slow ones because you don't have patience for them. You cannot tolerate spending hours to get them to move to where they can be part of the community and feel acceptable in the community. So how do we do that? I want some feedback and some talk from all of us. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the business of community based on rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I've thought about the difference between community and Christian community. And when you think about Christ's message always is to reach out to a stranger and reach out. So I've often thought in a church, we always should have it be a circle with the open side.
Mm-hmm.
That always, that the rule is, we always have to be open in some way, work to make the community welcoming to the new person, to the different, to the. And it's hard to do because people tend to like to have community be something that's very excluding. So in a lot of definitions, a community actually based on how they exclude people, mm-hmm. rather than. So I think the rule, the rule that comes from Christ of always being open to the stranger and to maybe if you start with that as the focus of community, that may be an important way to do it.
I hear two questions. One mm-hmm. is, what do we do that pull us together?
Mm-hmm.
And then I hear Anne raising the question of when we get too tight, what do we do to loosen us up? It's sort of like, what is it? Who's the physicist? Centrifugal and centripetal.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes we overdo it,
mm-hmm.
or do it in such a way, do it the wrong way, and then it isn't working anymore. But those are two different moments.
Mm-hmm.
I think of classical, the Reformation, as trying to correct false ideas of community,
mm-hmm.
and now I feel like we're in a period where there isn't any community. How do you start when the tide is coming in and everything's washed away? And I think there's community in the Midwest. There isn't community on the coast in the same way.
That's what he is feeling at the moment and mm-hmm. hearing us. What are you all feeling?
Well, I kind of agree with Anne,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, where we're worshiping, we're feeling that it's wonderful to bring all these people in, but what do you do about the people that are already there being ignored and not? Voices aren't being heard, and your children feeling like they're just little pieces of furniture. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I'm feeling.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a sense of that too, where there's a lot of emphasis on reaching out mm-hmm. to people that are different, that we should bring them in, mm-hmm. and I think that's necessary, but the person sitting next to you, mm-hmm. the family sitting next to you, is experiencing a lot of pain, mm-hmm. and you know that, and somehow, as a community, we're mm-hmm. not doing anything to reach out to that person or that family within our own midst. So how do you create more of a community that connects with the people that are right there is a part of it.
Okay, you have a question there.
It seems to me one necessary step is to break down society's value system so that we genuinely see real value in each person, mm-hmm. as I am sure God does. We tend to value more people who are successful or who are gifted or who are somehow set apart better than average. And if someone comes or someone is a part of a congregation mm-hmm. and by the measure of society mm-hmm. they don't have much to offer, mm-hmm. sometimes it takes conscious effort, number one, to value that person, mm-hmm. or conscious effort to value people. I don't think you can do it mm-hmm. all the time. And then a conscious effort to find the gifts that they have for the community.
Okay. Any other?
One other thing about community is I think one of the most community building things, if you, and I think you do have to pay attention to each other, though, also is to have a vision that you work to together. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, you sometimes get to know those brothers and sisters by you, once you've done it, there's a binding about that. But I agree with you, it's a hard tension. Mm-hmm. It's a real hard tension. But I know that that sometimes reaching on beyond you in whatever way it is as mm-hmm. a community does build the relationships between you. Because sometimes if you very intentionally sort of focus on each other, mm-hmm. it doesn't go, I mean, it doesn't really work the same way as working together through thick and thin on things.
Yes, I think going around different churches, being the kind of person and the work I do, I think I have come to witness what you were saying, that we don't know how to build community. We have to accept that. Because always we feel like we have to close one door in order to open another. We do not know how to say, let's open all the doors and see what God will give us. See how this can come. We are human and we always want to be in control. We always want to, and I feel sometimes like we've gone back to where Jesus came, the society Jesus came into, that we have put some of the people out there as sinners and some as righteous, and we've divided ourselves into little boxes. That is very hard, that instead of looking at the other person and see God in that person, you define that person with something else. The other person in the next pew is not less than who you are or important than who you are, because you all were created equal. The same God breath we were talking about this morning was what makes you all human. And if we can look at that, that's the beginning of recognizing each other. But I think we have sort of moved to use what we do as who we are. And it's very different, because our skills are very different. Yes, those skills were given to us so that when we come together, we can help each other. And the scripture that comes to my mind
is what Jesus said, the Sabbath was made for us, but not us for the Sabbath. When people ask Jesus, why are your disciples, you know, plucking grains on the Sabbath? It's wrong to do that. And Jesus stopped and said, did you not know what David did? When he and his men were hungry, he went to the church, to the temple, when Abiathar was the high priest, and took the bread from the presence. And not only did he eat the bread, he gave to the men whom he was with. How do you interpret that? I believe that Jesus' question for them to think about. Because they bogged down themselves with the Ten Commandments. And so Jesus concluded to say to them, I think the Sabbath was made for you to be able to take rest, but not to use it as a rule. And I think most of the time, that's what community becomes. The rules become the control. Instead of helping us to be free, and that answers my brother's question, we pull it too tight, and then we cannot breathe. And what Jesus was trying to do is loosen it up for us. And when you look at the Ten Commandments, let's look at it again in the face of community. The Ten Commandments was given to the Israelites to help them to become a community because they weren't a community. They have lived about 400 years under somebody else's rule. They've been told to breathe when they need to breathe. They've been told to wake up when they need to wake up. They've been told to work when they need to work. They have not been their own person. And so when they were liberated, they didn't know what to do. They had all these times on their hand. They didn't know what to do. They didn't even know how to live with each other because somebody else has taught them how to live. You get what I'm saying? And so they didn't really have anywhere to go, anything to hold on to. And so God gave them something to start them to know how to live with each other. And instead of growing up through those rules, they were stuck with it. And it had become a yoke around their neck, and they couldn't move. And so Jesus used that opportunity to say, grow up, grow up. This was given to you so to help you to move on. Why are you stuck with it? Does it make sense? Yeah, you're stuck with it. So move on with this. You know, the best thing for you to survive, if you have to eat the bread of the presence, do it and survive. If you have to break the corn on Sunday in order to survive, do it so that you can carry on being co-creator with God. But we don't understand it still. So when we come together as a community, the first thing we try to do is to try to isolate whoever else is not part of us. Instead of saying, okay, we all understand this together, so here we are, we're a community. The best thing for us to do is to reach out to those who are not yet there to help them to come. Instead of hitting on them as they try to crawl, we stamp on their hands so they couldn't climb. And that's how I feel sometimes we make communities to symbolize for me. And I have seen it over and over and over as I go around. You will see these little communities inside a community who is, it has become like an elite club. Mm-hmm. You have to get there in order to get in. But that's not what the scripture here, okay, my sister?
One question I would ask is that communities that have been very oppressed, say minority communities right now, my most recent exposure was a presentation by people who are disabled, mm-hmm. talking about the need to develop identity. Mm-hmm. And talking about maybe really wanting to, well, I guess it's they want attention too. But I think you hear about, I think communities who have been oppressed will sometimes say, we need to build the strength mm-hmm. within ourselves and the self esteem
sure.
in order to be a full part. And so that's another area of community that sometimes some groups, especially who have been oppressed, will pull apart and say, let's learn who we are and what's strong about us, because otherwise we're there and we just are oppressed.
Okay, what becomes wrong with that community after a while?
I suppose it's awfully narrow.
Okay. That's the Ten Commandments that I was using from biblical point of view. Yes. The Israelites were oppressed for many, many years. So they needed to pull apart. And in order to grow, they needed the rule to help them to grow. But after a while, what happened? They started using the same rule to oppress each other. And it goes in circles. So in order to break that circle, that's where we get these prophets. That's where we get these people, sometimes we label them the rebels. They will say it, they will get the vision, and they will say there's something wrong here. I want to just, and sometimes the hard part is to be able to dialogue and say, you know, let's look at this. This started a nice way, but how far have we gone with this? Can we retract our steps? And sometimes I feel that the prophets are not there anymore. Instead of speaking, and when you become a prophet, you know that you carry this fire inside you, and it's not you. Is God in you acting out? And sometimes we cannot stand it. So what do? We stone them. We kill them so that we won't hear them agitating us. And so unless we make, you know, we come in a body as we are doing, talking about this, we are not going to go anywhere. Because what we will do is let's pull ourselves out of this. Because we are not getting attention. And what you are going to create here is going to be another way of doing it. And I shared this story in the group, and I think our time is getting closer, and I want to share so that we can use that as a dialogue again. I went to do a mission in Maryland some years ago, and that parish, I guess, since from its beginning, it's been a white parish. And I guess I was the first black person to go in that parish. When they were asking for a sister to come and do a workshop for them, they didn't know that our community is a mixed community. And they asked for a sister who can come and do intergeneration workshop. And that's another field that I do a lot. And so I was asked to go. So I prepared myself and I went to Maryland. But as soon as the rector met me at the train station, I knew there was something terribly wrong. And I have this body, you know, with me, given the background. Once I start getting into my background, as we progress, you will know why I'm saying this. I can pick it up. It's like a magnet. I mean, you cannot hide it. I can pick it up. And so I was sitting in the car feeling a little uncomfortable, And then he started telling me I was going to stay with this family. They are very nice, you know, very open. And I said, fine, and as the talk progressed, he has to say, you know, you are the first black person coming to, you know, this parish. And this parish has been there, gave me the history of it. And actually, the parish is built on a slave landing place. It used to be where the ship or the boat land. And so when they still have the dungeon. It can go through there on that history. And they have pictures of the priests, you know, who have been there, the rectors, on the wall as I went there. So I just took it in and I said, oh, now I know what is wrong with this. But it didn't bother me. I went into the church that Saturday morning for the workshop. I mean, a whole congregation with the children and everything. And as they started coming in, I mean, I could feel it. The tension was so thick, you can cut it with a knife. It was so thick. And I mean, a single human being, right? It was so thick, you can cut it with a knife. And I sat there until, you know, we gathered and the priest introduced me. And then I got up to the front area and, you know, I was sitting in the back when he was introducing me, and I got up and I was in full habit, you know, long habit, white, and my veil. And I stood up there and I said, let's get this out before we start everything. I said, you asked for a nun to come do a workshop for you. You didn't ask what color you want. And this is what you've got. You might as well enjoy it. And they all crack up just like that. I mean, people started just laughing. It took them a long time to get over. But by the time the laughter was over, everything was gone. The whole tension just disappeared from the room. And we had such a wonderful weekend together. And if you go to that parish and you mention my name, my word, I mean, now they look to me like, you know, just a princess or somebody, you know, somewhere who just happened to land in that place. That's the best thing that happened to them. Now, you know, they have a black rector. When the rector left, the new rector, they called him. He is as dark as he could be. And when he first told me he was in that parish, I almost just fell down, you know, the word way. And he said, you want proof? He opened his briefcase and took out my card I gave to them when I left. That if you want me to come to another mission, this is it. He pulled it out. He said, I have every document on you. Here, you want proof? So, you see, these are some of the things. Sometimes I feel like Jesus is vocal enough, loved enough to sometimes confront in a way that, you know, they're going to kill this man the next minute. And he will say it and he will walk away from it until God's time was appropriate before they killed him. But he made the difference. So if we are going to really live in a community, we want a community, it has to start with us. And we cannot do it alone, charging out. What you do is you lift the people with you, just like the next person in the pew. If you don't minister to them and bring them up on board, they're going to resent it when you start looking out. So what you do is you bring everyone along with you as you go. You don't go alone. Keep them informed what is important. And in order to do that, you have to have the prophets amongst you. You have to have the visionaries, those who will have the vision, but they cannot, you know, they will articulate the vision, but somebody else has to put it in place. And we have those people amongst us.
Okay, it's now to you. You have any comments you want to say any more about what you've talked about?
I have to go to the dish team right now, but I'll say something and then I'm going to leave.
Okay.
But I appreciate so much what you say, and I just want to say that personally I'm working really hard to try to do that in my own life right now. I know that I have a gift to give to the church, and I've been working faithfully at that for a long time, but there's a way that I have of hiding behind that gift. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And other people put me behind that gift too. And
mm-hmm.
one of the decisions that I made when I came this time
mm-hmm.
was I was not going to try to increase my reputation or prove my identity based
mm-hmm.
on that gift.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to try not to get caught up in that, but
mm-hmm.
rather to participate more fully in the life of Holden Village. So I'm
mm-hmm.
going to Bible studies and
mm-hmm.
these things, which I've never done before. I've come
mm-hmm.
here so many times, and I don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's why it's hard. It's really hard to bring the person in the pew along with you.
Yeah.
If you're the one that's running up there leading things
yes.
all the time, and
yes.
you forget
mm-hmm.
how to do that. It's scary.
It is scary, believe me.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you are aware of it.
Yeah.
I began by saying that the awareness is so
mm-hmm.
important.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you are aware of it. That's the beginning
yeah.
of doing it.
Yeah.
Is to be aware. And if you are not aware of it, it won't happen.
Right.
But I want to encourage you to do that, to continue to, you know, participate and do what else you want to do.
Yeah.
But people who put you behind that gift will also be the people who pull you.
I know. Yeah.
To bring it forward.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now I go to do dishes.
Thank you for your contribution. Yes, anybody
right.
else?
I have,
yes.
I have something to say to him.
Uh-huh. I'm late, see, I'm being
you made a difference in the Bible study.
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah, I think in one church that we are visiting, that is a major thing, that the people in charge, the leadership in charge, take advantage and pretty much squelch whatever tries to come up or tries to help. You know, there's just certain people that have these gifts and they don't recognize, like he recognizes the fact
mm-hmm.
that,
exactly.
oh, you know, there's the conscious effort
mm-hmm.
not to be
mm-hmm.
or exert their power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real stumbling block.
Yes, it is.
I think another problem is that we sometimes don't dare ask people and participate something. That at least happens to me. I'm a pastor's wife, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, we know about the need for volunteers, for example. But when you first see people come in, you somehow think, oh, they have to give them time to, you know, kind of feel their way in. You don't want them to feel overwhelmed by people saying, oh, come on, you know, we could need someone there. But maybe that would help them feel more included, you know, just to,
mm-hmm.
as you said, bring them along when you
and
are
you
about to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important, especially you being the pastor's wife or rector's wife, you have opportunity that your husband may not have, okay? And normally when I talk to clergy wives, that's what I say. You are the eyes. If you are in the church, you're supposed to be able to help him identify who is being left behind. Because you sit in the pew. If you are not involved too much with him, always, you know, looking up and watching how clever he is or this, which I don't like my tongue in saying this, you know, and how wonderful you can do that at home. But in church,
I'm serious, you know, I'm serious. I say these things, but I'm serious about that. You are the one who can identify for him. Sometimes there are people who come to church and they will sit in the same spot, in the same seat. They will never put up their hands when you ask for volunteers. They will never do anything. They want to be personally asked. Mm-hmm. You go to them and you say, oh, would you do so, so and so? They would jump up with joy. Mm-hmm. But they will never put up their hands when you ask. Because they want to be, and this is what is so important, that you have to know your flock. And you go back to the Bible again, Jesus said, I know my sheep, and they know me. You have to know your people and whom you can tap, okay? So being a, you are in a position to help, okay? Yes. Then we will come back.
Yeah, that was great. One thing I think that I think about a lot in our community is what you said about, someone said, I think it was you, said that, you know, you need to be a counterculture, you need to go against the society's mm-hmm. values. And I think our community does that very strongly, except for the, and I think they realize this to some extent, except for the value of, you know, you are what you do. And I think there's so much intensity in a lot of people about, you know, making the world a better place and being, you know, being mm-hmm. Christ in the world and that kind of thing. But what happens that I see is, well, there's a lot of things that happen, but the thing that causes some people, I think, the most pain is the that then you have the doers out there doing. I mean, if somebody's in the mm-hmm. hospital or mm-hmm. moving or, you know, sick or having a baby or something like that, everyone is there with meals and they're mm-hmm. moving and, you know, they're so active and so involved. But there's that intangible thing, that welcoming and that, like you said, listening for the slow people,
yep.
that we don't do very well. And there are people like myself who are leaders in the community, but who are also not those barge ahead kind of people. And mm-hmm. I never really know where I sit. And there are other people who are even less able to lead. And I find it just so hard, because being more of a sort of beer, you know, mystical, you know, that sort of, I don't even know how to say this really, but there's more of a kind of a being community, which has often been women, but it's not, you know, only, but it gets sort of undervalued, or people don't know how to deal with it, they don't know how to value that. You know, and what the response that we often get, you know, our little group of kind of like, but couldn't it be more like this, is kind of like, well, do something. You know, so it's kind of like we have to become like them mm. in order to be, you know, they say, well, we'll take you seriously if you, you know, get it going and get a ministry started and, you know, do it. You know, have a program and that kind of thing, and it's not always easy. I don't even know what
they want you all to be a blender kind of soup, mm-hmm. but you need to be a crock pot. We have only about 2 minutes, okay. And I don't know if there is another class, but I mean, you're welcome.
No, lunch.
Oh, okay, so we have two or three people's hands up, so you next.
Well, mm-hmm. I think, especially in congregational life, in a congregational mm-hmm. community. I think there's a danger mm-hmm. for the leadership, or the leadership in different areas, mm-hmm. to manipulate
mm-hmm.
people.
Yeah.
Now, it's for the good of the community, mm-hmm. but that good of the community has to be a consensus kind of good. Mm-hmm. It can't be the good of the community as defined by the council or the pastor or mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And I somehow there's a link that we don't have there, because mm-hmm. I think there are, like you, to invite someone to come along. Mm-hmm. If a new person comes to church on Sunday, mm-hmm. and they're reasonably nicely dressed, and you find out the man is a physician and the woman mm-hmm. is a teacher, and children play piano, you know.
You see, there we go again.
That's true. Another family comes, or maybe a single person comes. I remember once a single person came carrying a backpack, probably had not bathed for a while, and was obviously troubled. Okay. Now, which person or which person or family, you know, is that congregation most interested in being into the community? The one who can contribute. That's the one they're drawn to.
Yep.
Not the one who's needy.
Yeah.
Because they're going to take, they might take more than they want to give.
That has happened. So
I know what you're talking about.
So what's missing?
What is missing is they put the value on what they do instead of who they are. And that's what I started with, that if we would go back and discover that what you are looking for is the Christ in that person, and whether they come in gold shoes, golden shoes, or they come in tattered clothes, they have that Christ spirit, that God's breath in them, and that's what you are looking for. So you won't treat one and say, oh, sit on this chair, and then you tell the one, sit at my feet. You give them both a seat. And I did that to rectors one time, using the image of the prodigal son and asking them the same question. If your child's come back smelly, who has been tending pigs, would you run out and kiss them, or you will just say, go wash and come and give me a hug? So think about it. Yes, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I think it's interesting though, when we talk about community, I think what I've been hearing is about Christian community. And so we've been kind of there's been a particularity to community, and I see it, you know, more broadly. I mean, if you talk, you can't just talk about a faith community, because it could be Muslim, it could be Buddhist, but I've been hearing a lot about the Christian community, you know, when we talk about the support within the church to bring one another along, to reach out to other people. And I'm wondering, in terms of Christian community, then there sounds like there would be a transformative process that goes along with being in that community, that happens to me individually, as I'm transformed, then to reach out to other people, and to bring them along. As an introvert, it's really difficult sometimes, because I can rub very much against extroverts who talk a lot, and when somebody talks a lot, my tendency is to pull back and to want to be a part of the community. Although I am, just by
being there,
present, I'm in the community. But in terms of participation as an introvert, it's a lot more intentional on my part to do that.
Yeah, what I want to respond to that, David, is that when you are looking at something, you start with a smaller portion you know, and then you expand. So we started today with a community we each know. And what do we mean by community? Okay, we are going to expand as we move, because we have to sort of bring each day as an entity in itself. We are going to be talking, God willing, tomorrow about what's an ideal community. And that's going to move out from the church. And that's why I haven't make any comment, but I'm aware that everything we've been talking about, community, has been a smaller community. And that smaller community has been our local church. We haven't even moved into our local towns. Moreover, thinking globally. And I want, by the time we get to the end of the week, we are looking at global, and not just our little corner here, okay? So thank you for pulling that up. And the other side about being introvert, I will encourage you that sometimes rubbing yourself against the extrovert
is a good way of helping you to sometimes come out, because they are going to yap enough to make you angry sometimes. And then you go, wait a minute, you know, I have something to say. And so don't stop it, it's good, you know. But if you, that's why I said, if you really go with those you really agree with, or those you really are in group with, it's hard to see beyond that. Because if you go with all introverts, you all are, I have been in a room with introverts, and for about 20 minutes we just sat there. Because as I introduced, and I wasn't going, and I told them, I said, look, I can go either way, and I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to do the talking for you. And so we sat, until finally they felt uncomfortable, and they started talking. When they started, I mean, we had a good conversation, but I had to intentionally say, I'm going to be extrovert, an introvert with you, if that's what you want to do. And so it's good to have the balance. Okay? And you saw me asking my brother up there that what do you have to say? Because he's up there, I could have pretend he's not there. But I acknowledge, unless my eyes doesn't see. And so if it comes to a point that I feel that everybody is saying something and there is introvert not saying anything, believe me, before I finish, I will say, what do you have to say? It's important to rub with the extroverts, okay? Somebody else had a hand up when the hands went up. Okay.
I was just going to thank you for the image of the open doors. Because I think that one of the big things in community is that scarcity model, that there's only so much of whatever there is. And I think we have to keep reminding ourselves that there's room for everybody and everybody's ideas. And, I think that's a good image to keep.
Open our doors. Brother, now it's your turn. You mentioned a community in Seattle. Can you say a little bit about that?
I'm not sure if I was clear on that. I was sort of saying that often Seattle would be described as a community, but given our culture and how I would look for a community, Seattle really is not a community.
Oh, okay.
So that typically the kind of community that I think we should strive for as people of faith, the models that are out there are smaller groups that are having those open doors and sharing with each other. And Seattle certainly doesn't do that.
Still do it in the smaller areas.
That's where I'm wondering what the difference then is between the word like neighborhood and community, and maybe are those then two kind of different concepts, because there's a way where I wouldn't necessarily say my neighborhood in Minneapolis is a community, but I would like us to work towards that. I mean, I feel like that could be a solution to a lot of the problems of the city, is if we really do care and look out for whatever might be happening, whether we know the person that lives six houses away or not, but that we have a concern in a way that, you know, if we see their kid out and we're wondering what their kid is doing, we're going to feel like we can ask and say something. And I guess to me that would define community, that can happen in a city, that can happen without a faith based, but maybe it's just a neighborhood.
Okay. We use these words interchangeably, and that's why today I focus on that. Sometimes we will use family. And we will say church family, right? And what we mean by church family, when we use this word?
Christian community, or?
Okay. What we are actually saying is we are using this word for this. Okay? And it's very confusing. And that's why when we say community, we have to define what kind of community we are talking about. When we look at the whole universe, we are all one community. Because if we all were created from one couple, or we are descendants of Adam and Eve, then we are one big family, if you want to say it that way. Or we are, and so when you are saying this, we've used those words very limited in a way. Or I say my family, meaning the ones I live with in the same house. Or when you use the word neighbor, what are you saying? What are you referring to?
I would be referring to it as someone that lives next door to me, or someone that lives on my street. Or...
That's right. And that's what we say. And what does Jesus say? The neighbor is what whom you are kind to.
Mm-hmm.
A neighbor is the one who understands your pain. A neighbor is somebody who would reach out to you, doesn't matter who you are, when you need help. But we talk about neighbor, as, and these are some of the things we are going to be pulling out when, as we are moving out into the global world. Because we are not in an isolated world. There are other beings other than us walking on two legs. There are others on four legs that we depend upon too, to survive. You see, they are all our neighbors too. And so these are some of the words that we say. So when you say neighborhood, maybe you are talking about six blocks, but New York can be your neighborhood. So when you think globally, you have a bigger picture of than just the next door or your church. And so when we continue with this talking, we are going to be talking in those terms, finding our way into a bigger picture, okay? So as I said, our time is up. If you want to sit here and continue to talk, fine. But I think we've come to an end, and he may be, the tape is maybe even off. So thank you all for coming. And tomorrow, I think it's also at the same time, 10:30. And we will be moving further than our church community. So now that you know what we are doing, think about it. So that tomorrow, you all will come up with something. You know, you did very well today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dave, I'm Rebecca.